Hare Krishna. I'm very happy to be back here in Sydney. I'm also enlightened by Ghanishyam Govinda's, Prabhu's statement that I'm coming here for the sixth time. I had also lost track. But don't believe the other things he said. And I'm especially happy that I'm here in this month of Kartik. And this holy day of Deepavali is the first day I'm with all of you. And I hope that we can spend a few happy days together here for the next 10, 12 days. Hare Krishna. So today we'll have some discussion on the glories of this festival, Deepavali, and the days preceding that, and also the days after that. This festival of Deepavali is not just in one day. There's a series of days. So we'll speak briefly about that. Hare Krishna. So we'll have some kirtan now. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Janavallabha Girivaradhari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivaradhari. Yashodanandana Braja Janaranjana Yashodanandana Braja Janaranjana Yamuna Tiravana Chari Yamuna Tiravana Chari Jai Radha Madhava Kunj Bihari Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivaradhari. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Radha Gopinath Radha Gopinath Radhe. Jaya Jagannath, Jaya Jagannath, Baladeva Jaya Subhadra. Jaya Gauranitai, Jaya Gauranitai, Gauranitai, Jaya Gauranitai. Jaya Jaya Prabhupada, 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 Jaya Prabhupada. Nitai Gaura Haribol, 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 Nitai Gaura Haribol. Jai Om Vishnupad Paramhansa Parivrajakacharya Ashtotra Sata, His Divine Grace Abhay Charanaravinda Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Gopinath Ki Jai. Shri Shri Jagannath Baladeva Subhadra Mai Ki Jai. Shri Shri Gornitai Ki Jai. Shri Deepavali Mahotsava Ki Jai. Nitai Gaur Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories, all glories, all glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuronmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padang Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum langhayate girim Yat kripatamaham vande Shri Gurundina taranam वंचा कल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधोभ्येव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। नमो महावदान्याय कृष्ण प्रेम प्रदायते कृष्णाय कृष्ण चैतन्य नामने गौरत्विषे नमः। पञ्चतत्त्वात्मकं कृष्णं भक्तरूपस्वरूपकं भक्तावतारं भक्ताख्यं भक्तशक्तिकम् आराध्यो भगवान् व्रजेशतनयस्तद्धाम वृन्दावनम् रम्या काचिदुपासना व्रजवधो वर्गेण या कल्पिता श्रीमद्भागवतं प्रमाणममलं प्रेमापुमर्थो महान् श्रीचैतन्य महाप्रभोर्मतमिदं तत्रादर न परः। हे कृष्ण करुणा सिंधो दीनबंधो जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिका कांत राधा कांत नमोस्तुते। तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरि प्रिये। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्त वृंद। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। हरे कृष्णा। Vedic culture in general and Krishna consciousness in particular is so nice because we have so many festivals. Every other day there's a festival. A festival is an occasion of joy. It's a celebration. Lots of festivities. It's an occasion of merriment, happiness, joy. The Sanskrit word for festival is Utsava. I think you've all heard of this word, Utsava. So what does the word Utsava mean actually? The word Ut refers to removal. Sava refers to worldly misery or grief. So Utsava is an occasion that removes our sorrow and grief. So on the ordinary plane of material activities, people try to forget their sorrows by celebrating mundane festivals. You know, it is said in Sanskrit, Manava Utsava Priyaha, which means human beings like to have festivals. Because generally life is so drab and dreary and monotonous and so full of suffering and pain. We want to have some occasions where we can enjoy ourselves thoroughly. And because there is generally a lack of God consciousness in the world, so the kind of festivals that people enjoy overall in the world are all mundane in nature. So for example, we have sporting festivals, yes, Olympic Games, Wimbledon, and football World Cups, and so many other sporting events. Here in Australia you have so many other types, I don't know, rugby and soccer and what other festivals. So this is an occasion where thousands and thousands of people gather together and they experience some thrills. Of course, the losing party always ends up mourning, but then they're back again in full zest, the next attempt at victory and thrill. So you have these sporting festivals, you have film festivals. In a place like India, where generally one is supposed to have Vedic culture. One of our sannyasis was saying that as he was traveling somewhere, he saw a board that was announcing Matanotsava, meat. It's a festival of meat. What to do? This is the age of Kali. So they need some utsav, they need some festival. So in Germany you have the Oktoberfest. Everyone drinks beer. It's a beer drinking festival. Germany is famous for beer, among other things. So you need a festival. But if you're not God conscious, then those festivals are going to be simply causes of degradation. They're simply rooted in ignorance. And they will only perpetuate and further our bondage to this material world. They will only perpetuate our suffering. So they yield no real benefit to the people of the world. The enjoyment through such festivals is merely illusory. Sometimes you have people celebrating religious festivals, but often, cutting across all religious faiths, these festivals are celebrated more as a formality, as a ritual, without understanding the deeper spiritual significance of it. People don't understand the true import and the purport of these festivals. And therefore these festivals are reduced to social events where people come and socialize and maybe they exchange gifts and they eat good food, they wear nice clothes, and it's generally a time of merrymaking. It's a holiday from your work. So whether it's a Christian festival or a Muslim festival or a Hindu festival or any other kind of religious festival, the true spiritual import gets clouded over by some social or some other kind of impetus. So as a result, what happens is that what was originally meant to be something very holy, something very spiritual, now morphs into something that is just ordinary, just something mundane. I often say that the word holiday originally started out as being holy day. That's the origin of the word, holy day. Because in the West, especially in the Christian tradition and the Jewish tradition, they wanted one day in the week where they would exclusively devote themselves to God and they would not perform any other mundane activity like their business or job or anything else. And they would go to their place of worship and devote themselves to religious and spiritual activities. However, as time went by and people became more and more materialistic, the holiness of the holy day reduced and the holiday became full of unholy activities. So today the word holiday is no longer a holy day, but it's rather an unholy day. So people look forward to the weekend so that they can go out and drink and party and do all sorts of things. Anything that is unholy. So the very spirit of holidays, of festivals, are lost. Even when it comes to the festival of Deepavali or Diwali, in various parts of the world, and especially in India where Diwali is celebrated, it is exactly that, just a mundane festival without any understanding of why it's celebrated. What is the spiritual significance of these days? So people just think it's a nice occasion to burst crackers and then eat some sweets and exchange gifts and have a fun time. So it's important for us to know what these festivals are all about. Therefore, if you look at our Vaishnava calendar, you'll find a list of so many festivals that appear at different times. So we should try to understand the significance and the purpose of each festival that's listed in that calendar, at the very least. There are many other festivals too, but at least those that are listed in our calendar, we should try to understand the significance of that. So Deepavali Deep and Avali has two words. Deep means a light or a lamp. Avali means a row in Sanskrit. So Deepavali indicates lighting a row of lamps or row of lights to celebrate something. When there's a joyous occasion, we celebrate it like that. The word deep or light is very significant in Vedic culture. And in general, it's also appreciated all over the world that when there's something auspicious or joyous, you light a lamp. So in Vedic culture, lamp is lit to invoke auspiciousness and to drive away inauspiciousness. A lamp or light also signifies knowledge, as opposed to darkness, which signifies ignorance. In the Bhagavad Gita, in the 10th chapter, Lord Krishna says, Tesham evanukam partham aham agyanajam tamaha nashayam yatma bhavasto jnana deepena bhasvata. He says, Tesham, to them, to whom? Those who have surrendered to me utterly, who are completely engaged in my devotional service, to them. Out of mercy, I, seated in their hearts, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness of ignorance. So we are born in the darkest of ignorance. We are not born as self-realized souls. Very, very, very few rare souls in history are born like that. So we are born in ignorance, and that's there deep in our heart. So the torchlight of knowledge has to be lit in the heart. And Krishna says, I do that. Seated in the heart of all living beings, I light the lamp of knowledge in the hearts of those who are dedicated to me and who serve me with faith and devotion without interruption. So that is the significance of a lamp. A lamp is also used to offer worship. You see, in the Arati ceremony, we offer a lamp, a ghee lamp. What's the purpose of offering the lamp? Actually, what is the purpose of the Arati ceremony? It has many different kinds of explanations. One of the explanations is that we offer the elements of material nature to Krishna with devotion. Because after all, these elements are his energies, they are his property, and therefore we must offer what belongs to him, and everything belongs to him, back to him, but added with the element of devotion. So when we offer incense, we offer in the earth element. When you offer water, you're offering the water element. When you use a fan, you offer the wind element, the air element. Similarly, when you offer the fire, you're offering the fire element to him, the lamp. So the lamp is also used as an expression of our devotion to offer the fire element to the Supreme Lord Krishna. Now, we should see that we don't use the lamp for something that is inauspicious. It's a modern custom that you celebrate birthdays and then you have candles in the cake. And as many candles as the number of years you've lived, right? If you're 20 years old, you have 20 candles. And then the birthday boy or the birthday girl huffs and puffs and blows out those candles. Yes? I don't know if people still do that. People do that still? So I tell devotees wherever I travel that, you know, this is not a good thing to do at all. Because when you blow out the lamp, you're actually bringing in inauspiciousness. So what you're saying by the act of blowing out the light is that you want darkness in that person's life. The darkness of ignorance. Rather, we should light a lamp. We should not extinguish lamps. So at least if you have to celebrate birthdays, like, don't blow out the lights. Don't blow out the lamps. Even today it is a custom that when you start something auspicious or you start some ceremony or a festival or any program, generally you do it by lighting a lamp to invoke auspiciousness. So therefore, for all festive, joyous and ceremonial occasions, lamps are lit. It's also an expression of our devotion. So Deepavali is when you light a series of lamps And then Deepotsav. So Deepotsav is a festival of lights. So all over the world, Deepavali is well known as a festival of lights. Even as I was flying down from India, in the airline, Malaysian Airlines, they were playing Indian classical music in the plane. And I asked them, how come? I was expecting to hear some Malaysian music or something like that. They said, today is Deepavali. And happy Diwali to you, the air hostess said. So all the way, not just from Delhi to Kuala Lumpur, from Kuala Lumpur, Sydney also, they were playing this music because they were celebrating Deepavali. They also celebrate Deepavali in the House of Lords, or House of Commons, I forget which one, in London. The Prime Minister, the Queen, they all come, and then different devotees speak. ISKCON is also represented there. The president of the Bhaktivedanta Manor also speaks a few words. Even in Australia, I'm told, there's a festival of the Prime Minister and other dignitaries attending the program. So it's becoming a very well-known festival all over the world, which is very nice. But then what is it all about, really? That's the question. At least we who are practicing devotees should have a deeper idea of what it is. Let's start with a few days before Deepavali. Actually, Diwali is generally celebrated not just as one day, but as several days. It's a week-long festival, maybe 6 days, 5 days at least. The whole of Kartik month is full of festivity and joy. And we're specifically talking of these 5 or 6 days. This Deepavali day is the day of the new moon. New moon is a time when the moon is not seen. The dark moon is completely covered over. We cannot see it. And as opposed to that, after 15 days or before 15 days, you have the full moon. So from the full moon to the new moon, you have a period of 14 or 15 days. And that time is called the waning moon. Right? So from the full moon, the brightness reduces till it comes to the new moon when it's not seen. And again it starts waxing from the new moon to the full moon. So that's called the period of the waxing fortnight. And previous to that is the waning fortnight. So the fortnight leading up to today, that is Deepavali, which is Amavasya in Sanskrit, which means the new moon, when the moon cannot be seen. That's the waning fortnight. This is the 15th day, or the 14th, 15th actually, the Tithi. So on the 12th day, which is Dwadashi, it's called the Govatsa Dwadashi, where the cow and her calf are worshipped. Of course, we as devotees worship the cows on all days, and specifically on the Govardhan Puja day, which is tomorrow. So we have Go Puja, Go Krida, etc. tomorrow. But traditionally in Vedic culture, this is also one day where the cow and her calf are worshipped. Because it is said that it is on this day that Kamadhenu, the wish-fulfilling cow, emerged from the churning of the milk ocean, the Samudra Manthan. You know, the demons and the demigods were churning the milk ocean to get nectar. So many, many things came out from that churning. So one of the things was this Kamadhenu cow. Kamadhenu, kama means desires. So that cow who can fulfill all our desires. So the demigods and the demons together took the cows. The demons weren't looking at the cow. They were thinking how to get nectar so we can live a long life. So then this cow was given over to the seven sages, and eventually it came into the possession of a sage called Vasishtha. And then this cow was called Nandini. There's a big history about this cow, Nandini, and Vishwamitra Muni and so on. So therefore this day is also called the Nandini Vrata. So many people in Vedic culture worship the cow and her calf on this day. The cow is considered the mother, as you know, of all humanity. And she is worshipped because her blessings can give rise to auspiciousness in our life. Just going and stroking the back of a cow, feeding the cow some grass, cleaning the cow dung from the floor. These are very nice services to do. Generally, when you have trouble in your life, and I'm sure we can't complain of any lack of it. So one thing to do, which many devotees do, is they visit the goshala somewhere and they serve the cows. I remember one sannyasi saying that one time there was a husband and wife having a lot of quarrels. And he was at his wit's end, he didn't know what to do. You know, so he tried to kind of mediate and solve the problem, but he wasn't able to. So he said, you know, just go and serve the cows. So they went and served the cows and they became all right. So anyway, it goes to show that this is very auspicious, very nice. So on this day, the cows are worshipped everywhere and it's known by different names in different parts. So that is the 12th day. And then on the 13th day, which is Trayodashi, the 13th day of the fortnight, the Vedic month has two fortnights, the waning and the waxing fortnight. So on the 13th day, it's called Dhanteras. It's actually a distortion of the original word Dhana Trayodashi or Dhanvantari Trayodashi. Teras comes from Tera or 13. So it's the corruption of the original word. So it is said to be the day when Lord Dhanvantari, who is an incarnation of Lord Krishna, appeared from the ocean, the same ocean, that where the milk ocean where the demons and demigods were churning. So Dhanvantari emerged. He is an incarnation, and in one hand he was holding a pot of nectar, that nectar for which the demons and the devotees were anxious, the purpose for which they had been churning the milk ocean. So in his hand, he had one hand he had the pot of nectar, and in the other hand it is said he had the Ayurveda text. Of course, the demons and demigods were looking at that pot of nectar. So they grabbed it. The demons managed to grab it first. And so they had it. And then, of course, you all know the pastime of how the demigods went to the Supreme Lord Vishnu. And Vishnu incarnated as Mohini Murti. And then he somehow, by trickery, transcendental trickery, got the nectar from Mohini Murti. Recently, a few weeks ago, I was in a yatra in South India with a group of devotees. We went to many places of Lord Narasimha Dev's pastimes, and we also went to one temple, which is the temple of Mohini Murti, Mohini Avatar. I have personally never been to a temple of Mohini Murti before, so this was also my first visit to a Mohini Avatar temple. And this deity is very unique because in the front, when you look at the deity from the front, it is Lord Vishnu with four arms. When you go to the rear side of the deity, you see Mohini Murtis. She's got the hair of a lady and she's Mohini Murti. And it's said to be the form that Lord Shiva saw when he was going after Mohini Murti. So in any case, Mohini Murti finally got the nectar. But Dhanvantari emerged. So therefore, this day is also celebrated in India by the government as the National Ayurveda Day. Just recently they announced that, because it is a day when Dhanvantari appeared. If you go to any Ayurvedic hospital or any Ayurvedic practitioner, usually they will always have a deity of Dhanvantari. Because he is the Lord, actually. He is an incarnation of the Lord. And he gave this science of Ayurveda, the science of life, to humanity. He taught it to Sushrut, and then so on, the parampara, the disciplic succession of Ayurveda started. So on this day, those who are practicing Ayurveda, they worship Dhanvantari, and in general people in Vedic culture worship Dhanvantari for good health and so on. It is also called Dhanatrayodashi. It is said that Lakshmi also, the goddess of fortune, also appeared from the churning of the milk ocean. There are differing accounts of exactly on which day Lakshmi Devi appeared. But anyway, this is also one of those days where Lakshmi Devi is said to have appeared, the goddess of fortune, from the churning of the milk ocean. And she immediately went to Lord Vishnu. And then she was married to Lord Vishnu. Of course, Lakshmi Devi is forever, eternally the consort of Lord Vishnu. But when the Lord appears within this material world, he performs pastimes, just like Sita and Ram. Sita and Ram are eternally together in the spiritual world. However, when they appear in the material world, it appears that there is some event that happens. They were not together before, and then there is a Swayamvara ceremony, and there's a competition of many princes who want the hand of Sita in marriage, and they come and Ram emerges victorious. There he breaks the bow of Lord Shiva, and then he wins the hand of Sita in marriage, and then they get married. So this is a pastime. But actually, they're always together in the spiritual world. Similarly, Lakshmi Devi and Lord Narayan or Lord Vishnu are forever together. But this is a pastime because the Lord is appearing within the material world. So because Lakshmi Devi appears there and then she got married to Lord Vishnu, so many people, they worship Goddess Lakshmi on this day. Of course, Srila Prabhupada explains that one should not worship Lakshmi Devi alone, because Lakshmi Devi is the goddess of wealth. Lakshmi Devi herself is always engaged in the service of her husband, Lord Narayan. So Lakshmi, which means wealth, is meant for being used in the service of Lord Krishna, for the Supreme Lord. It's not meant for being used only for our own sense gratification. So Srila Prabhupada explains that one who worships Lakshmi without worshipping Narayan is actually not doing the right thing, because they want to have wealth separately for their own pleasure, for their own enjoyment, but has nothing to do with the service to the Lord. So that attitude is not good. It is not devotional. It is selfish. But still, at least people worship something rather than looting a bank or, you know, trying to get money in some other way. They worship Goddess Lakshmi, please give us money. And Lakshmi Devi says, all right, okay, I'll give you some money, but I don't give you happiness. Remember that. That only my husband can give. Lord, when you become devotees of the Lord, then real happiness will come. You only want to worship Lakshmi separately, she may give you money if you like. That money would be the cause of great disturbance in life. So anyway, people worship Lakshmi also on this day. And because it is Lakshmi's day, so it is the tradition for people, they will buy a lot of gold and silver and so on. It's considered auspicious to buy it on this day, just as it is on the Akshaya Tritiya day, which is considered the hottest day in the year. Also, many people offer lamps in the sky on this day. They also offer lamps at the root of Tulsi. They worship Tulsi also on this day. And there's an interesting story that I want to tell that happened on this night, on the 13th night. There was a king called Hima, and he had a son, the prince, and he was just newly married, a young man. And in his horoscope, it was said that he would die on the fourth day after his marriage by snake bite. So his wife, the young princess, came to know about this. So she was wondering, what should I do to save my husband's life? So then, when the fourth night arrived, she had already made her preparations. And she was a princess, so she was very wealthy. So she had a lot of gold and silver ornaments and everything. Lots of them. So she had mountains of these things. She placed them all around their house. And they were shining like anything, with all the diamonds and emeralds and gold and silver and everything like that. And she also lit lamps all around. And she kept her husband awake by telling him stories and by singing melodious songs, devotional songs, I presume. And in this way, the night was moving on. Yamaraj, the god of death, he was approaching. But when he came there, he was blinded by the glare of all those ornaments and the gold and silver and the lamps that were shining so much he couldn't even see. So he just perched himself on top of the ornaments and he didn't go further. And because the princess was saying so many nice stories, he got absorbed in the stories and the night passed. And in this way, the princess saved the life of her husband. So therefore, in commemoration of that, on the next day, which is a Chaturdashi, the 14th day, that is yesterday. Today is the Amavasya day, the night of the full moon. Chaturdashi is the 14th tithi, just before that. So on that day or that night, that is celebrated by some people in honor of Lord Yama, or rather to pacify him so that he should not come to the house now. So they offer lambs to Lord Yama, and they place these lamps around. So the festival of lamps actually starts much before, not just on Diwali. And we as devotees of Krishna do it every day in the month of Kartik. So for us it starts even before. So then to keep auspiciousness, to keep inauspiciousness away, to keep Yamaraj away so that there is no death in the family during this period, they light these lamps. So Yamaraj should not come in. So then we come to the Chaturdashi. Yama Deep Dan is done, not only for Krishna but also for Yama. But for one who is a devotee of Krishna, because Yama is one of the Mahajans, one of the great devotees of the Lord, devotees don't separately need to worship Yamaraj. Worshipping Krishna is sufficient. And he will handle Yamaraj. He will take care of Yamaraj. And a devotee understands that if death is to come at a certain time, it's destined to come, if that's what the Lord wills, so be it. And the devotee is prepared for passing away from this world at any time. Because for a devotee there is no consideration of auspicious and inauspicious times and places to pass away. In a sense there is, but ultimately in a higher sense, when one is thinking of Krishna, when one is involved in serving Krishna, which is transcendental, then it is beyond any material considerations of auspiciousness and inauspiciousness. Because Krishna consciousness is the most auspicious thing and activity in existence. So for a devotee engaged in Krishna consciousness, it doesn't really matter. But nevertheless, I'm saying all these things so we understand the larger Vedic culture. We understand that there is a hierarchy of personalities whom we must also respect. It is an important principle, theological principle for us, that we understand Krishna to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we are monotheists in that sense. We accept Krishna as his incarnations, but we believe in that one Supreme Lord. At the same time, we also understand that there are other divinities who are of a lesser stature, who are dependent on that Supreme Divinity, Krishna. These divinities, who are minor divinities, subordinate divinities, should not be confused with the Supreme Lord. That is an offense. Many people worship the demigods thinking them to be supreme, which is offensive. At the same time, we should not offend the demigods either. That is also offensive. So in our eagerness to serve the Supreme Lord Krishna, we should not end up offending and criticizing the demigods. Sometimes, of course, the pastimes of Krishna are such that the demigods are shown in poor light. For example, in the time of the Govardhan Leela, and Indra is shown in pretty bad light. And he exhibits his lower nature. So one sannyasi was joking one time in one lecture, because he was speaking about Govardhan Leela and he was speaking about Indra's bad qualities. And he said, you know, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, if that one leaves his devotional service incomplete in this life, then one will be born in the heavenly planets in the next life and enjoy life there for thousands of years and then be born again on the earth and continue Krishna consciousness. So he said, you know, I've been criticizing Indra. If I don't complete my devotional service in this life, Indra will be my next temple president. And you never know, so I better not criticize him too much now. I'll be under him in my next life. So anyway, the point is that we understand that demigods are not the Supreme Lord. At the same time, we should respect them. We should not criticize them, because we understand these are also very exalted personalities. They're not ordinary people. Just as if a minister were to walk in here, the minister in the government of Australia were to walk in here, we would stand up to offer respect to that person. We wouldn't say, oh, they may be not a devotee, so why should I respect? No, because somehow by the Lord's sanction, this person has got an important position where he or she is ruling over all of us. So we have to respect that. We don't stand on false ego. Similarly, it doesn't mean that because someone is a minister, we will listen to everything they say. No, we will listen to Krishna's words of wisdom. But we offer respect. So in any case, the reason behind telling you about these other festivals so that we have a larger idea of the Vedic culture and how these different personalities fit in and how we should respect everyone. We don't necessarily observe all these festivals, but there are other people who do. So we should know about these things. So this is as far as Yama Deepadan is concerned. In certain parts of India, this 14th day is called a small Diwali. And in certain parts of South India, it's considered the main Diwali day. So either way, this is Chaturdashi. It's also called Naraka Chaturdashi. Naraka means hell. And the reason this has got the name is because Krishna killed a demon whose name was Narakasur or Bhaumasur on this day. This is explained by Shukadev Goswami in the 10th canto in quite a bit of detail. How many of you have read the Krishna book? Okay, one of the first things you have to do is in this month of Kartik, read the Krishna book. Okay, all of you read that. Srila Prabhupada wanted all the devotees to read the Krishna book. It contains all the pastimes of Krishna, right from the time before his birth, all the way up till the end of his Dwarka pastimes. So in the 10th canto, Shukadev Goswami describes in detail about the killing of Bhaumasura or Narakasura by Krishna. Now this Bhaumasura, the name originates because he was a son of Bhumi. Bhumi is Mother Earth. The Sanskrit name for earth is Bhumi. So because he's a son of Bhumi, he's called Bhauma. Now Mother Earth is a great devotee of the Lord. And you know who the father of Bhaumasura was? Anyone knows? Varaha Dev, the Supreme Lord in his Boar incarnation, Varaha incarnation. So when he lifted earth, who was submerged in the Garbhodaka ocean with his tusks, he actually impregnated her because the Lord is transcendental. So therefore he impregnated her with the touch of his tusk. And therefore Bhauma was born. Now sometimes children lament, or devotees lament that the children are not devotees and so on. Never mind, even the Lord's son is sometimes not a devotee. So if it's of any consolation to you, just remember, not only was the Lord's son not a devotee, he was a demon. So Bhaumasura, he had actually created havoc everywhere. He had even gone to the heavenly planets, and he had very most impudently taken away the umbrella that was there on the throne of Varuna, the god of the oceans. He had also stolen the earrings of Mother Aditi, who is the mother of the demigods. And he had done numerous such things. So Indra and the demigods approached Krishna in Dwarka. Please, could you do something about this demon? So Krishna says, all right. So he got on the back of Garuda, his carrier, the eagle carrier. And he took along with him his second senior most queen, or rather his one of his senior queens, Satyabhama Devi. And so they went on Garuda. Normally Krishna wouldn't take his queens for battles, but in this one occasion he did. So they went there to his capital city of Bhaumasura, which is called Prag Jyotishpur. Now this capital city was tremendously fortified. Shukadev Goswami describes the fortifications of this city. Time does not permit us to speak in detail about